War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's 20 December, the year of our Lord, 2019. We're live from Capitol Hill. It's episode 83 on the John Frederick Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, broadcasting throughout the nation. AmericasVoice.news, a streaming service both in the United States and throughout the world. And also Newsmax TV, fastest growing cable news operation in the country, passing 70 million homes under the leadership of its founder, Chris Ruddy. Okay, Jason Miller's on assignment doing some Christmas shopping. And
I thought it was Star Wars.
Christmas shopping, Star Wars, and a family dinner. I think all.
You know, we don't hold that against him. He works so hard.
Yes,
I don't blame him at all.
Although I duly noted it. it is Christmas bonus time, right?
That's it. That's his bonus.
The afternoon off. Take off the afternoon show. Okay, Raheem, it's been, and I think you're going to see what the flow of the holidays is. Last year we had the budget battle. President Trump stayed in the White House, for the entire time. Might have gone down to Mar-a-Lago for a day or two, I think. But I actually think he stayed there. People came back and had Christmas up in the White House. President's leaving for Mar-a-Lago, even as we speak. I think getting close to leaving. But today's been both the Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats positioning themselves on, exactly where in the process this begins. And I think, quite frankly, the most important thing is, what is the House going to do when they get back? How long is it going to take? Because, to be brutally frank about it, they're pushing it back. They're pushing this trial back into really dramatically affect the Democratic presidential primary. And if it's such a clear and present danger, you think they'd want him stopped dead in his tracks, you know, immediately. But obviously, he's not such a clear and present danger since they voted for impeachment. But the big thing today was other people piling on. It was other people coming out. You know, the four horsemen of the apocalypse. These consultants that started the super PACs that they raised, I don't know, $400,000. They're going to do negative ads. Other people that have been Republicans in the past coming against President Trump, saying it's a good thing. You see, CNN and MSNBC are bringing up people that were in Congress, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But I think the most important narrative today, at least in that regard, is what happened with the magazine founded by Billy Graham many decades ago, Christianity Today. And today we had some, the president kind of went on offense, said what he thought. Christianity Today came out, and the editor, Mr. Galley, and said that the president should be removed. Right, that they should not just convict him in the Senate, but convict him to remove him, not some sort of censure. And so the president, we've had some back and forth today, and I think we've actually got some audio of Galley. How do you want to play this?
So I just want to reframe that a little bit. You've remember, these are the guys, the Democrats, and with their media arm in tow. These are the guys who have
been. Is that their media? Is the overlords of the Democratic Party?
All right. I mean, either way, they march in lockstep. These are the guys, remember, who in the last several months, for the first time in decades, have been interested in what's in the U.S. Constitution.
They've fallen in love with the framers.
And exactly.
They've fallen in love
exactly.
with the framers.
They
the
realize
Constitution, the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yep.
Every icon, right, that they've come
actually,
up with.
And, you know what? I'd love to go down to like Mount Vernon or something and just say, hey, I wonder if, have you guys seen any celebrities come by here? Has Chris Cillizza made his first visit, figured out who Jefferson is?
In Raheem Kassam.
Figured out who Washington is?
In Raheem Kassam's world, Chris Cillizza is a celebrity. Okay.
Well, that, unfortunately so.
We're going to give you an afternoon off.
Thank you. Maybe I'll watch Star Wars. Look, so you had them really, you know, making these whole like overtures towards the Constitution, towards America's founding, towards what's in it regarding abuse of power and everything they think they can impeach the president on. Now the pivot, right? Now that Nancy Pelosi, and we played the clip of her sort of gibbering on this morning about everything
yeah, she,
and nothing.
She was wandering.
She was wandering. She was trying to figure
having
out
a senior,
on the spot.
Having a senior moment.
Well, I didn't say it. But now they've suddenly discovered this religion called Christianity.
Oh, evangelical Christianity.
Evangelical Christianity. You know, remember, until about a few months ago, maybe a few weeks ago even, these were the homophobes, you know, one of the clearest and most present dangers as far as...
Hang on. This is the American Taliban. This is the American Taliban.
That's right.
And all of a sudden, they're loving up on them.
Today, they've got the editor, the outgoing editor, I will add.
Well, hold it. That's a buried lead, bro. We're going to get to that in a second. He's been promoted as the editor. We just found out in the Brooke Baldwin thing, he's the outgoing editor. Big difference if you're editor and running the magazine. You're going to be accountable for subscriptions and accountable for traffic and accountable for donations, right? And you put this, maybe that's in your own mind, a profile of courage. But when you're the outgoing, this is your shot out the door.
Maybe he just doesn't like who his successor is or something. Maybe there's some internal spat going on and he's trying to tank the subscriptions. I'll tell you what, he'll have done it today. They have a print circulation, Christianity Today, of about 130,000.
It's not shabby at all
in the print magazine world. Approximately 36,000 of those are believed to be free, and there's a believed readership of around 260,000 once they factor in all of the free riders and all of that, which is not a poor circulation at all. This was founded in 1956, remember, and in this media market, It's a credit
to
them.
That's a good print thing, and they get some real traffic.
It's a credit to them that they can keep going at that rate. I mean, you remember the Guardian newspaper's circulation is only about 400,000, probably a lot less nowadays, in fact, than it was a few years ago when that number was last out. So Mark Galley, he puts out this opinion piece, effectively calling for the president to be removed. The headline is "The President Needs to Be Removed from Office." He goes into great detail on this, talking about the moral character, but also opining and stating as fact his opinion that the president has done something wrong as it pertains to Ukraine and foreign policy.
Immoral.
Yeah, it's sure.
Immoral.
But he's also making political statements.
Yes.
He's putting himself in as a judge of the president in this whole situation, which I don't know. I'm not an evangelical, so I don't know where that fits in with what how he's supposed to comport himself. But he is the judge in this situation, and he is putting himself out there. So, of course, CNN and all the rest of the media, it was leading the Washington Post this morning. It was leading the CNN website this morning. And Mark Galley has since appeared on CNN this afternoon.
Called shot, Mr. Bannon. I said it today. He's going to be all over CNN, MSNBC. That wasn't a great piece of insight, right? So I shouldn't take a bow on that.
But this was because I think in response to, as well in part, President Trump's, as you say, going on the offensive, tweeting this morning, a far-left magazine, or very progressive, as some would call it, which has been doing poorly and hasn't been involved with the Billy Graham family for many years, Christianity Today, knows nothing about reading a perfect transcript of a routine phone call and would rather have a radical left non-believer who wants to take your religion and your guns than Donald Trump as your president. No president has done more for the evangelical community, and it's not even close. You'll not get anything from those Dems on stage. I won't be reading E.T., he means C.T., again. Now,
what I like about that, he didn't go back and even make correct the typo. He didn't change it. I said at first, did they change the name to Eternity Today?
And by the way, I actually
looked it up. I thought it might be, I took the hook, Mr. President. I bit hard.
By the way, E.T. was trending this morning on Twitter.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
But here's what I love about the president and Dan Scavino. It wasn't worth a change. It wasn't worth to go back and change it.
No. President Trump also saying later on this afternoon, I guess the magazine Christianity Today is looking for Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, or those on the socialist communist bent to guard their religion. How about Sleepy Joe? The fact is no president has ever done what I've done for evangelicals or religion itself. Now, there is some element of distinct truth to that. I mean, even just the recent executive order on anti-Semitism, the protection of faith in all forms has come under President Trump.
The protection of life, I mean, it's across the board. Yes, evangelicals, they're very happy. I'd like to say something about his evangelical, and I'm not opining on somebody's religion, but I think there's evangelicals and there's evangelicals. I actually go to Christianity Today, the site, not a regular basis, but every so often to check what they've got. Yeah. But I was very proud. In fact, what I was doing when I came into the Trump campaign, we were just about to release a film I'd worked on for many, many months for the 2016 campaign with Phil Robertson,
yep.
Duck Dynasty, Dave Bossie, was the producer. I was the writer-director. Torchbearer. Now, that's original gangster evangelical.
Yes.
That is OG, yes. Okay? This is hardcore. The Phil Robertson and the Duck Dynasty folks, those great folks down in Louisiana, had such a... And we went all over the world. We went to Athens. We went to Rome. We went to where the French Revolution was. We went to Auschwitz. A couple of other concentration camps. We filmed there. This was hardcore evangelical, yeah, right? Old school. And not, this is not the Christianity Today crowd.
I remember it vividly. I came to the screening in New York, and I remember you standing at the door. You and I had one of our famous tiffs at that point, and I remember you standing at the doorway.
Something about Raheem whining about how hard he was working and wanting more pay.
Well, that was
a weekly event.
That's right. Hey, listen, I'm on the Bernie side on this one. I have not seen a real terms pay rise in 10 years. Okay. Look, the Torchbearer, incredibly powerful. You got those big sweeping shots, the drone shots. I think you broke a few laws in filming all
of
that.
Well, in Athens, my team got, the Acropolis got arrested. So yes, the Athens authorities.
But what you're saying is Galley and that are quite distinct.
I'm saying there's a spectrum,
distinct.
And it, listen, the three foundational component pieces of the Trump movement are the NRA or the gun owners, right? The Second Amendment guys, the evangelicals, and what I would call the nationalist, populist, Tea Party, grassroots base. Those are the three foundational elements. And obviously, there's some issues at the NRA, right? And there's you see in Virginia now that the people are declaring sanctuary cities because they lost the legislature down there. The evangelical base is absolutely essential to the Trump reelection. The Democrats know that. Under discussion about signing up evangelicals who are not signed up to vote and engaging them and getting that to the pulse of evangelicals, and then obviously the nationalist populist base. But the evangelicals are one where the Democrats have made a huge effort to get in and using certain young preachers to maybe connect with people with the green ideology and other ideologies. Christianity Today is a flagship publication. It has, like many of these publications, had better days in the past. It was obviously not been associated with the Graham family or Billy Graham and his line of teachings and beliefs in evangelical thought. I think it's gotten quite, people would think that it's gotten quite moderate to liberal. And in the evangelical world, particularly the world of Phil Robertson and these evangelicals who are very strict about their interpretation of the Old Testament and the New Testament, The Christianity Today is a left wing publication and a progressive publication.
Now, it's worth noting at this point that Franklin Graham has responded on the Facebook page to Christianity Today in a lengthy post.
This is Franklin Graham Jr.
Yeah,
Franklin. Okay.
Yeah. And you know, I won't read the whole thing because it's, as I say, it's pretty lengthy. But it goes to some length in saying Billy Graham founded Christianity Today would not agree with the opinion piece. In fact, would be very disappointed. It says, I have previously not shared who my father voted for in the past election, but because of this article, I feel it is necessary to share it now. My father knew Donald Trump, he believed in Donald Trump, and he voted for Donald Trump. He believed that Donald J. Trump was the man for this hour in history for our nation. And it goes on in quite some detail about President Trump's achievements on the economy, about ISIS, about the trade deals, and the achievements for Christianity. The most pro-life president in modern history, a staunch defender of religious freedom at home and around the world. Christianity Today said, it's time to call a spade a spade. The spade is, Christianity Today has been used by the far left for their political agenda. It's obvious that Christianity Today has moved to the left and is representing the elitist liberal wing of evangelicalism.
Kaboom. A factoid. This big controversy when Donald Trump went to Russia to a host, I think it was the Miss Universe pageant or to the Miss Universe pageant there when he was the owner of it, he went over. He flew overnight because he attended the funeral of Billy Graham. Mm. He was invited to attend. That's how close he was to Billy Graham. He was invited to attend the funeral of Billy Graham. He went down and attended the funeral of Billy Graham and then left there and went to and flew to Moscow to attend that. So President Trump has a pretty strong and deep relationship with the Graham family.
Now, when I read that from Franklin Graham on the Facebook page, what jumps into my mind, and you're going to tell me, I'm not the theology expert here. We've had a lot of this across the pond in the United Kingdom when he talks about the elitist liberal wing, right?
Dude, you cannot compare the Church of England and the complete implosion of the Archbishop of Canterbury. That thing's a disaster. That's not even, I mean, that is, I don't even know what that is anymore.
Right, so that's what I'm asking.
That's not a comparison. I mean, the Christianity Today would be a right-wing publication.
Of course.
The Church of England just completely.
Yeah, but I mean, Slate would be a right-wing publication in England, so that's not saying much. What I'm asking is that from your knowledge of this, is it true that the institutions like Christianity Today are being pulled in that direction?
Oh yes, they're definitely after younger evangelical preachers and ministers that address a younger millennial audience, and they're using things like climate change and other social issues to try to get in because they understand this is a growing block, and one of the reasons is technology has made the life issue come to forefront in evangelicals. That used to be a Roman Catholic, conservative Roman Catholic issue. Many evangelicals are at the leader, are at the vanguard of the life movement. Mm. And the left has been all over this. And I think what Franklin Graham has just said in on his Facebook page is very perceptive.
I've been to a lot of churches, especially around Capitol Hill. It's funny, you really can't find very many now that don't have the rainbow flag outside. There is a push, there is a move there, and it seems like church leaders from all sorts of denominations appear to be caving to that. I mean, there is something there, and there is some outreach there that we're not necessarily seeing on the face of it, but this is the face of it. Mark Galli going on CNN, that is the face of it. That is them almost.
How bad did he throw President Trump under the bus?
Well, why don't we listen to a little bit of what he said on
CNN?
With
my favorite, Brooke Baldwin.
I just read that section for you, where you laid out why this is important. And you say it's not a matter of politics, it's a matter of faith. Why?
Well, because there are times, of course, when there are issues that transcend politics. So this, to me, this is one of them. I mean, I grant that the Democrats have been partisan in their efforts to remove the president, and at times I think have been unfair. There's no question about that. But in this particular instance, the facts that arose in the impeachment hearings rise above that partisan level. And one of the things I'm trying to say in the editorial is this is reality. No matter what, how it came about or the motives that helped it come about, this is the world we live in. This is the president we have, and we need to deal with that honestly.
As you take a step beyond the politics here, and you say his actions are flat out immoral.
Well, yeah, I don't think that's a particularly unusual or surprising insight. I mean, people have been saying that for some time. The question is, when does his behavior, which is described as immoral accurately, rise to the level where he's no longer fit to serve office? And to me, we crossed that line with the impeachment hearings.
Okay, it's Tucker Carlson. I think you've heard enough of that.
No. If you want the rest, you can find it on the internet.
Hold it. I'm sure you're going to summarize it and put it up on the. Yep. But here's on warroom.org.
That is the internet.
It's a little bit of mumbo jumbo, right? Mm-hmm. That's a guy that's a little gauzy. Brother Galley's a little gauzy in his thinking.
I just want to describe the scene as well for the people listening, rather than being able to see that. Okay, this is from. I think he's in Glen Ellyn in Illinois, and it's 4K HD camera from his kitchen, Steve. There's obviously a studio he can get to, right? Where near to where he is, but they've chosen to do it from his kitchen. He's wearing a nice little sweater. He looks
very Christmassy.
It's very Christmassy. It's very familial. The framing of this is very well done by CNN, and the framing of what Mark Galli is actually saying, you know, there is a time when there is an immorality here that means that a president can no longer serve. Now, he's supposed to be at least, if not channeling the evangelical community, he is supposed to be representing or some way or some kind of high-minded.
He's putting himself up as a representative,
right?
Big time.
But in his day job, he's either supposed to reflect or lead or be analytical on behalf of. Is he really saying? Because they've never done this before. Is he really saying that there's never been a politician before leading politician, or maybe a Speaker of the House, Vice President, President of the United States, that is acting in an immoral manner?
That's
enough for him to chime in.
That's what he's saying.
Well, I happen to believe that from a Christian perspective, when Obama lights the White House up in rainbow colors, I might have stepped in.
What in the hearings would raise to the level for a Christian preacher to say that President Trump should be immediately removed from office? I must have missed even in the 7,000 pages of testimony. I'm still missing this.
Well, he writes in his op-ed about what has been termed the abuse of power. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the
but even that's too general. Then when bribery wasn't treason, wasn't high crime and misdemeanor, and they never hardwired it to the Constitution.
Well, and that's what my last question was about. Because why didn't he say this about Joe Biden and his dealings in China, or indeed his dealings in Ukraine? Why haven't we heard this about anything that Nancy Pelosi's done? Why haven't we heard this about anything? Fast and Furious, Benghazi, you name it. Anything to do with the Clintons, Clinton Cash, the foundation, everything. Mark Galli was silent on all of this stuff.
But he's going out the door now. That's because he's running a magazine and a website. Now he's going out the door. He's going to take a cheap shot.
I feel very, very sorry for whoever his successor is.
You will see this guy everywhere as now the spokesman for the evangelical community on CNN, MSNBC.
Weaver of evangelicals?
We're going to make Brother Galli famous, right? We got to make Brother Galli famous.
I will happily. And
we're
by the way,
look, we're going to have to drill down on Brother Galli.
If Mark Galli wants to come on this show,
he's welcome.
And have his say so, he is welcome. We will treat him with respect. And we will not try and shout anyone down here.
Christian humility.
Absolutely. And that's an open invitation to Mark Galli.
Let's go to how do people find out more about what's going on? We're on every day, 7 days a week, until the day after the acquittal of President Donald J. Trump, or the exoneration, I guess I should say now, of Donald J. Trump.
So the warroom.org website is alive and kicking all day, every day. The lead story right now is the latest Rasmussen data that landed in my inbox a couple of hours ago. 51% agree impeachment is an abuse of power by the Democrats. You can read that at warroom.org.
President Trump's memes working on that. What else do you expect? What else is going to come up today? What else is hot on the site before we jump to a break?
Well, after we get back from the break, we want to talk about the clear and present danger on the stage in Los Angeles last night.
It doesn't raise to the level of danger. It was boring. Snooze face. But hey, the pillow fight broke out at Loyola Marymount in LA.
I'm trying to create some. Yeah, I don't want anybody to tune out.
War Room impeachment live here. We're going to return with Raheem Kassam. Episode 83, Stephen K. Bannon. Be back in a moment.
War Room. Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. We're live from Capitol Hill today. Cold and beautiful day here. We're live. It is episode 83. We're going to go every day, including through the holidays, until the end of the trial of the century, which looks now to be mid to late January, maybe even February. And we'll have many, many episodes. You can get all the action, all the news on about the impeachment and other topics related to the election next November of the President of the United States, because this is what this is all about. Used to be the pregame, now it's the game. So Raheem, talking about the game, and talking about running for president, the witness protection program last night had its eighth episode, sixth episode. Talk about a snooze fest.
Yeah, I don't know about. I don't know if I was as bored with last night as I have been with some previous Democrat debates. At least they could jump around easier. At least some fights and some tension could build. Fewer candidates on the stage, but you could see they didn't want to be. That's what was really interesting about it. The tension's building, and I think you're going to see by the time of the next debate some real rivalries coming to the fore. You had Sanders and Biden just eyeing each other up, never really doing anything about it, scoffing a little bit to themselves, but eyeing each other up. You obviously had the flashpoint between Buttigieg and Klobuchar, where Buttigieg is like, "Hey, I'm a gay gay dude in Indiana and I won something. And Klobuchar saying, well, hold on a minute. You're denigrating people who have been in Washington and done things in Washington.
Plus, she lost in a statewide election by 20 points.
By 20 points.
Man, but kaboom.
It was a kaboom moment. I mean, if I were the moderators in that moment, by the way, you can't just keep going back and forth. You've got to pick who's dropped the mic and leave it at that and pivot away. But nevertheless, we had that. You had some strange moments of attempted camaraderie between all of them. Actually, Klobuchar, before she dropped the hammer.
They're such stiffs.
Before Klobuchar drops the hammer on Buttigieg, she actually had this moment. She was like, let's stop attacking each other. We shouldn't keep attacking each other, because somebody was talking about somebody else's wine cellar evening.
Wine cave. Get the meme.
I can't follow every meme.
Wine cave with crystals.
With crystal chandelier.
She didn't say chandelier. She said crystals. I stayed up all night. I'd stay up all night thinking it was like some Masonic thing.
And of course, the hit back at Elizabeth Warren, etc., for being a millionaire and taking money from billionaires. So you can see the rivalries building. But really, on that stage, what was interesting yesterday, and I know you know you pointed this out this morning, it's what a soft touch these people all seem on China, on the Afghanistan question.
This is the runner for student council president. But and I realize NPR did the debate. So NPR finally listened up to Worm impeachment and said, hey, if we want to shut Bannon up, let's ask a question on China, right? Let's ask a question for these guys. They want to be commander-in-chief, because the rest of it is just student council president.
Well, look, I think there is a framing. The media recognizes, at least, that it has framed this whole impeachment saga as a national security scandal.
Exactly.
And so they have to ask these national security questions.
Because Trump's a clear and present danger, obviously.
Remember, it was only a couple of months ago that we were talking about there was an LGBT debate. We're actually now bringing it back. We're seeing the reintroduction of core things that are interesting and that people vote on and that are of concern to the American public when they're picking a commander-in-chief. And what you saw last night was a cadre of people who are fundamentally not ready to pick up the mantle either economically or on national security terms. I want to start with Mr. Steyer, who has obviously been at the forefront of the impeachment stuff, and in his own words, for the last two and a half years.
He's funded the impeachment thing from day one.
From day one, he was the ground floor of impeachment. He also, for a billionaire, only seems to own one tie. It's a tartan tie, and it's awful. Let's hear from Tom Steyer on China.
Mr. Steyer, many Americans have been moved in the last months by the protests of the people of Hong Kong. It is Chinese territory, but what would you do as president if the Chinese government moved in militarily?
Look, there is a temptation, particularly for this president, to try and answer that in a bilateral way. The way the United States should be reacting in Hong Kong is by gathering our coalition of democracy and freedom-loving partners and allies to push back. In fact, when we're making moral statements around the world, it should not be us threatening and trying to be the world's policeman. It should be us leading on a value-driven basis with the other people who share our values and want to change the world. We actually can't isolate ourselves from China. In fact, we have to work with them as a frenemy, people who disturb us, who we disagree with, but who, in effect, we are linked to in a world that is ever getting closer. And in fact, if we are going to treat climate as the threat that it is, we are going to have to partner with the Chinese. They're going to have to come along with us. They're going to have to trust us. And together, we're going to have to solve this problem. So the ability to
okay, I've heard enough of this. It's total nonsense.
You start with Hong Kong.
They're
decoupling. He's asked about Hong Kong.
They should look at the Paris Accord. They're putting, $500 billion in the coal plants, which they lied about. As the Financial Times had an exclusive on the front page 4 weeks ago. John Kerry went to went up to New York and said, we got to get some teeth in this from China and India. They've been quadrupling down on coal. Because of they know it's a cheap way to run a source of energy to run their economy. All they care about is getting a 6% and 7% real growth, not the phony numbers they put up. Steyer, that is all just nonsense. It's just happy talk.
Well, you said student body president. He used the word frenemy.
Frenemy. Student body president.
It's childish.
He was on the ARB desk at Goldman. Yep. In the old days, ran a hedge fund. I actually did a transaction with him many years ago, 20, 25 years ago when he first started his fund. Tough deal guy, like a stiff on the stage and doesn't engage his brain. He knows China better, and that's ridiculous. It's all happy talk.
Really, really strange and odd to me. He comes off as a very strange character. He doesn't seem to talk much with his eyes at all.
I don't think he's robotic in real life, but I think he's robotic on stage.
And he's got this awful pale gray shirt with this tartan tie, and you just think, hey, dude, you're spending $81 million so far in the Democrat primary.
Well, $81 million, he spent a couple of $100 million on the impeachment thing. He's got a big thing.
Data.
He put money into the campaign. You think a guy spent now $250 million would have a few more people love him. This is what's so stunning. How do you put $250 million to work in a party that's always saying, oh, we don't have enough money, $250 million over the years to impeach President Trump, and nobody shows you're in love? You're 1.1% or something?
If you can get into a wine cave with Pete Buttigieg for $2,600, you should be able to do a hell of a lot with $250 million. Let me put it that way. But here's the just a real quick recap on that. He's asked a question about Hong Kong. And somehow ends on climate change and how they need to trust us.
Right.
They don't want to trust you.
Yeah.
They don't want to work with you. They want to destroy you.
But this is also exactly. The CCP is a group of gangsters. They're not going to sit there and trust you on climate. They lied to you to your face. They've lied about the Hong Kong deal. They lied about the cybersecurity and the militarization of the islands. The thing they signed in the Rose Garden in September of 2015, President Obama, that Biden was over there negotiating and getting his son $1 billion, lied to Obama's face. Cybersecurity stuff increased 50% 6 months after. They totally militarized the South China Sea, lied to the face of the President of the United States in signing an agreement. Then they lied on the Paris Accord. Financial Times just broke the fact that they're spending hundreds of billions of dollars building more coal plants than they've ever built. This is all nonsense.
Look, Steve, they just need to
trust them. I don't see the Time Magazine Person of the Year, Greta, which I have no – look, if it's a dedicated young person wants to get into activism, hey, that's their choice. It's a free world. Go do your thing. My problem is I never see her calling out China. She's always pointing at she's going to stand against the wall, all the European politicians, going to put them against the wall. Hey, from Europe's days, like with Trotsky, that's not too good from Romania, that's not too good a saying.
Well, I don't think people have a problem with Greta Thunberg herself. I think people have a problem with the fact that it's very clearly other people pulling the strings there and forcing her to say things and take positions and do hypocritical things like taking the train in Germany and then the train company saying, why are you sitting on the floor? You were in first class. Right. And you know, it's all of this stuff.
Quit picking on the kid. You're just
I'm not picking on her. I'm picking on her parents. Her very, very bad. I need it.
All I'm saying, Greta, point the finger, stand the guys up in the CCP.
Put the CCP up against the wall,
Greta. That's what you got
to
do.
Now, let's go to somebody who actually spoke a little bit more sense last night. Not all that much, but a little bit more was Andrew Yang.
Mr. Yang and then Senator Klobuchar.
I have family in Hong Kong. I spent 4 months there, and seeing what's happening on the streets, it's shocking. They banned face masks in Hong Kong. Why? Because they have AI technology that now is using facial recognition to identify protesters if they so much as do anything on the street, so they can follow up with them and detain them later. This is the rivalry that we have to win where China's concerned. They're in the process of leapfrogging us in AI, because they have more data than we do, and their government is subsidizing it to the tune of tens of billions of dollars. I have sat with our leading technologists, and they say they cannot match the Chinese resources. China just produced its first major smartphone that does not have Google apps, and it is now trying to export its technology to the rest of the world. What we have to do is build an international coalition to set technology standards, and then you can bring the Chinese to the table in a very real way, because this is their top priority, and this is where we need to outcompete them and win.
Now, hold on. This is very important. I told you early in this morning.
Yep.
The most significant geopolitical event of 2019 that nobody talks about until Brother Yang just mentioned it is China in the spring of this year laying out that they're going to go in different tech standards. This announcement the other day that didn't get enough coverage, that they've already put a mandate out. They're not going to buy any more American computer equipment. The reason is they've decoupled from the West. They've decoupled from us. They're going to build a hermetically sealed technology fortress to go along with how they've shut off the internet.
Why?
Well, because they know we're at a hot war in information warfare and cyber warfare. We're at a hot war in economic warfare. And this thing could slide eventually kinetic warfare. And they want their own systems. They do not want to be dependent upon the West for anything. What Brother Yang, I wish he had mentioned the AI. We supplied the technology. We supplied the capital. The reason they have the facial recognition, and it's even worse in East Turkestan or in with the Uyghurs, is that it's American companies that have provided the facial recognition. And I hate to add this, Joe Biden, but your son's private equity fund, I do believe, put money into these companies that are doing facial recognition to run the concentration camps of the Uyghurs and to suppress, as Andrew Yang said, suppress the people in Hong Kong.
This is why you see so little about the Uyghurs and about all of this stuff taking place out there. You know, the Joe Biden protection racket is real, ladies and gentlemen. The thing is with Andrew Yang is he almost gets there. Right, he's the thing.
Tries,
is,
he doesn't quite get there.
Good for him for trying. But you know, he says they got this facial recognition technology so that they can follow up with you later. Right. You know, so they can shoot you in the chest. You know, he's also got this whole thing
with
about
a rubber bullet
building but building this international consensus around tech standards. There is an international consensus around tech standards, and actually,
and they're breaking off from it.
Exactly, right. That's the point. You're not going to bring China to the table.
What he's still got is Silicon Valley chatter, right? Yes. That's the way they talk. It's all Silicon Valley. But at least he gets what I like about Yang. He doesn't waste your time. Boom, he does get to the one of the key points, which is over the head. You think Joe Biden understands that? You think Bernie Sanders understands that?
We're about to hear.
Come on. He's talking about these are the important issues that are driving the world. At least Yang's on top of it.
By the way, before we jump to Biden, what Biden effectively opened his campaign by diminishing the Chinese threat, right? What did he say? Come on, man.
They're not a competitor. They're a partner or something.
Let's see what he says now.
Our Vice President Biden on China, we now know that China is engaged in an unprecedented military buildup. They have just launched a new aircraft carrier. There are new signs of their disturbing espionage campaign here inside the United States. There are a number of disturbing signs from the Chinese. National security scholars have long warned about the historical precedent that when there's a ruling power and a rising power, there's likely to be a war. Is the U.S. on a collision course with China? What steps could you take as president? On a collision course with China,
but not for war. What we have to make clear is that we, in fact, are not going to abide by what they've done. 1 million Uyghurs, as you pointed out, Muslims, are in concentration camps. That's what they are right now. They're being abused. They're in concentration camps. And what we started in our administration that Trump stopped, we should be moving 60% of our sea power to that area of the world to let, in fact, the Chinese understand that they're not going to go any further. We are going to be there to protect other folks. Okay. Secondly, we, in fact, should make sure that we begin to rebuild our alliances, which Trump has demolished with Japan and South Korea, Australia and Indonesia. We, in fact, need to have allies who understand that we're going to stop the Chinese from their actions. We should be gone to the UN immediately and sought sanctions against them in the United Nations for what they did. We have to be firm. We don't have to go to war, but we have to make it clear this is as far as you go, China. And in terms of their military buildup, it's real. But it would take them about 17 years to build up to where we are. We're not looking for a war, but we've got to make clear we are a Pacific power and we are not going to back away.
First of all, it's a string of lies. The Obama administration, I, as a young naval officer, patrolled the South China Sea. Okay, what Joe Biden, we should go through there, guns up, radars up, everything, like the United States Navy's supposed to, like they do today under President Trump. Under Obama and Biden, they had this thing, I think it was called Safe Passage, right? No radars up, no guns, went through like, oh, we don't want to upset the Chinese, we don't want to be provocative. I don't think we even went through the Straits of Taiwan. So Joe Biden is a stone-cold liar, okay? And number two, we haven't changed them, we've put more naval forces over into the Western Pacific. That's just a stone cold lie. Joe Biden is totally corrupt and in business. His family's in business with the Chinese Communist Party. They've made money with the Chinese Communist Party. His corrupt, incompetent, drug addicted son, okay, that now has every other day another baby mama popping up on the stage to embarrass the country, okay?
Is that the one from Archibald's?
you're tough. His son taking money from the Chinese Communist Party. It's ridiculous. Everything he's saying, there's nonsense. The Japan, President Trump has done more militarily to help Japan and to talk about the rearmament of Japan. We cut a new trade deal with South Korea to reinforce our alliance there. Joe Biden is completely incompetent. He's totally corrupt, right? And he's a stone cold liar. And this is why it's a pillow fight. Not one Democrat on that stage called him out. This is why the Democratic Party, hey, Democrats, write this down. You're going to get smoked in November 2020. You know where you're going to get smoked? The same way you got beaten in 2016. You had a primary that's a pillow fight. Up there, not one Democrat called out Joe Biden for his obvious, his obvious spin on the facts. Joe Biden was there and was one of the leading guys that led President Obama to sign that, accord with President Xi in the Rose Garden that the Chinese knew they were never going to abide by on cyber intrusions and on the militarization of the South China Sea.
We haven't got much time left. I want to jump next to Amy.
Hang on. Do we have our guest has not called in? Okay, fine. Keep going.
Jump to Amy Klobuchar.
We're going to try and get down to the border wall.
When it comes to foreign policy, I think we need to keep our promises and keep our threats. And this president has done neither. And a country like China, their leaders, they watch that and they know. He has stood with dictators over innocence. He has stood with tyrants over free leaders. He does it all the time. And I have a little different take than some of my colleagues when it comes to what happened at that conference with NATO. Yeah, they were making fun of him, some of the foreign leaders. I've heard senators make more fun of other senators than that. The point of it was that he couldn't even tolerate it. He is so thin-skinned that he walked. He quit. America doesn't quit. So if we want to send a message to the Chinese, we stand with our allies. We stand with them firmly. We have a very clear and coherent foreign policy when it comes to human rights. Check out my website, amyklobuchar.com.
This is more happy talk.
I have five R's of our foreign policy about reasserting our values, rejoining international agreements like the Iranian nuclear agreement. But it all comes down to one R, returning to sanity.
This is more nonsense. This is running
that,
for
that
running
was
for
actual gibberish.
That's gibberish. You're running for student council president.
You're in gibberish territory. If halfway through your answer, you have to give out your website. That's how you know you're
the
in
five
trouble.
R's.
Right, the five R's.
Like he has not confronted China. He's not confronted China. Mike Pompeo and Mike Pence have both given landmark speeches where in Pence's whole of government confrontation with the CCP. Okay. The Commerce and Treasury, the intelligence apparatus, the Defense Department, across the board. Something that Obama never did. And these people on the stage, either Biden worked with it or the other people never said a word about it. And so you're going to sit up there and say the five R's now. That's total gibberish. She's going to be commander-in-chief. And this is not about being a woman. Hillary Clinton could be commander-in-chief. Hillary Clinton's got the bona fides. I don't think she'd be a good one, but she's got the bona fides to be a commander-in-chief. But right there, the five R's. And all this nonsense and gibberish and does not get called up. I didn't see any hands jumping up saying, hey, Amy, complete senator, complete gibberish.
What is this? What is this where she says we need to stand by our allies? Here I was under the impression that President Trump went to London recently and the head of NATO said it's because of you, Mr. Trump, that we have got more money in the NATO kitty.
You would think the NPR people might bring that up.
Right.
You might think it might bring it up that Jan Stoltenberg says if it was not for President Trump, the alliance would not be more robust because President Trump has put the pressure on these people to live up obligations they had under President Obama, which was the 2% of their GDP into defense.
Let's jump right into Mayor Pete.
I want to turn to another part of the world, and that's China. Mayor Buttigieg, you have said that you think China presents more of a challenge than do your fellow candidates believe. The U.S. clearly wants China's cooperation on human rights, on climate change, on North Korea, on terrorism, and yet Americans are appalled by China's record on human rights, including the detention of over a million Muslim Uyghurs. Should the U.S., is my question, do more than protest and issue sanctions? Should the U.S., for example, boycott the 2022 Beijing Olympics?
I think that any tool ought to be on the table, especially diplomatic, economic, and social tools like what you're describing. Look, for the president to let it be known that his silence, whether it's on the rounding up of Muslim Uyghurs in Xinjiang, putting them into camps, or the aspirations of the people of Hong Kong for democracy, For him to let China know that his silence can be purchased is trashing American values.
Well, listen, Mayor Pete did volunteer. He went to Afghanistan. We'll do more with this. We got to go through this China stuff.
Yeah.
We've 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. We're going to have
and more of Bernie as well. More Bernie of Afghanistan.
We'll spend more time with this. Maybe Monday show. I think it'd be good to get this stuff on here, Raheem. Fantastic job. Tell people how to get more information. Some of this is going to be up. We're going to continue with the Democratic candidates tomorrow. Bill McGinley. We're going to be talking about the trial. And then Sunday, Peter Navarro is going to be here. We're going to talk about the economy and economics. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Ghassan, warroom.org, is it, Raheem?
Yeah, in the meantime, we're going to throw all of this up on a post on warroom.org so you can go and assess it for yourselves. Make sure you're signed up to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all the rest.
Big week. They impeached the President of the United States, or did they? Get the answer tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. here on War Room Impeachment.